Hi, everybody. Nice to have you all here. For those of you who don't know me, I'm Venerable Pasunda. I use they, them pronouns and the honorific Venerable. And we're here at the Temple of Humanity. I'm filling in for Bhante Sujato. And we're here on the land of the Burramadugal people of the Darug Nation. And we pay respects to their elders, past and present, and their long history of culture and spirituality, which is tied to the land. So what should we do today, guys? Bhante's not here. We can do whatever we want. Right? No. I mean, we could just talk about dependent origination for an hour. Okay. We might not do that, but how does it sound if we do some chanting, some meditation, and then there'll be a Dharma talk about something other than dependent origination? Okay. I mean, I'd be totally happy to talk about dependent origination, but I was like, oh, no. Everyone else has probably had enough. Okay. So, yeah, let's start off by paying respects to the Triple Gem. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato samma sambuddhassa. Buddham saranam gacchami, dhammam saranam gacchami, sangham saranam gacchami, dutiyam pi buddham saranam gacchami, dutiyam pi dhammam saranam gacchami, dutiyam pi sangham saranam gacchami, tatiyam pi buddham saranam gacchami, tatiyam pi dhammam saranam gacchami, tatiyam pi sangham saranam gacchami. Iti pi so bhagava arahaṃ sammā sambuddho rīca caraṇa sampanno sugato lokavidu anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati satta deva manussanam buddho bhagavati svakato bhagavata dhammo sandhitiko akaliko ehi pasiko upanayiko pachatam veditabo vinyo hiti supatipanno bhagavato savakasangho ujupatipanno bhagavato savakasangho nyayapatipanno bhagavato savakasangho samichi patipanno bhagavato savaka sangho yadidam chatari purisa yugani atha purisa pugala esa bhagavato savaka sangho ahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo anuttaraṃ puṇyākhetaṃ lokasāti. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu. Okay. Welcome. Come on in. So now is the time for meditation. And so when we do meditation, we get to put down all the things from the week that we've done. All the roles that we played, right? When we come here to meditate, we're all just meditators. We're not parents and sisters and bosses and employees and all the other roles that we have to do, the nagging partner, the partner being nagged, I don't know, whatever it is, right? The nagging boss. I mean, like, whatever has been grinding on you this week, it doesn't exist, right? And all those things that you think that you're better at than anyone else here, that doesn't exist either, right? Like, all the things that you're skillful at in meditation, they don't exist, right? Because they're all things that are in the past and in the future. And so this is our opportunity to put all those kinds of conceit down, right? So we've got the three kinds of conceit in Buddhism, which is I'm better, I'm worse, and I'm the same. And I'll probably explain those a little bit later. None of those apply, right? And I think this is even something that we can do when we're doing group meditation. It's like everyone else here is all peaceful, and I'm thinking about my work week. I reckon everyone else here is going to have some echoes from the things that they've done, right? That's totally normal. So it's how we meet those echoes that come up, which is going to determine whether we have a peaceful meditation, right? It's like this attitude that we're going to bring to our meditation will make a difference, right? If we start getting into a fight with all the past and the future and start bringing up all those things of I'm good at this and I'm no good at that, then we are going to be getting into a fight instead of meditating, right? We're going to be getting into a fight with our own mind. And you're like, oh, yeah, no, I don't do that. Yeah, you do. It's a thing that, like, it's, you know, we want something because we, like, think, oh, you know, that's going to make my meditation better. I'm just going to go a little bit to the left, a little bit to the right. It's like, you know, you can totally computer game your meditation, especially when it's getting really quiet. You're just like doing little fine adjustments. Don't do any of that. Don't worry about it. To quote Monte Sajato. Don't worry about it, right? You know, we get to put all of that down and all those things that come up in our mind. They're just echoes of the past, right? They're all the things that we have attended to. You know, if you come up with brilliant ideas in meditation, then just park those as well, right? You're not going to forget them. You can actually tell yourself, okay, when I come out of meditation, I'm going to remember that. So if you have like this amazing way to solve like world hunger and poverty while we're meditating here today, sadhu to that, park it. And I mean, I imagine like a little notebook sitting by my knee and I like draw things down or write things down and then I move on. Because otherwise, you know what happens? At least for me, is I start like giving myself like all the instructions about how I'm going to do it, imagining how it's going to work out, right? It's not going to work out like that. Life doesn't work out the way we imagine. So all those things, they're made up. So just put them down. And this is your opportunity to settle into the present, and I'm not going to say present moment because that makes it sound like a tightrope. And the present can be like a needle pin, like the needle tip, or it can be like as big as a football field, right? And it's how we attend to the present that lets it open up and close down. And so it's when, because if it's like a needle tip, if it's like this tiny little thing, it's because we're trying to, like the past and the future are squishing it in to make it really small, right? So it's when we can give it a bit more space, then the present can open up. So come in. It's very stuffy with the door closed. Yeah, maybe we can just. All right. We're technical adjustments, non-technical adjustments, whatever it is. Okay. So we can settle in and do some meditation for about the next 20 minutes. So just take some time to have a wriggle, adjust anything that's squeezing or pinching, causing any discomfort. Closing your eyes if you haven't closed them and that feels comfortable to you. By closing our eyes, we let go of the need to bring in more sensory data, at least through the eyes. And we can ground ourselves in this room or whatever room you are in, letting go of the rest of your street and the village and the busyness of the work week, coming into the room, coming into your body, noticing how your body feels right now. Maybe there's little aches and pains and itches showing up as physical echoes of your day, your week, or your life. It's just normal and natural. And if there's something that you can do to make any of those aches or itches a little bit more comfortable right now, now is your time. And then just noticing the touch sensations of your feet contacting the ground. Zooming your mindfulness in a little closer into the more detailed sensations of your body. Seeing if you can feel all 10 toes. And just letting your mindfulness establish in the sensations of your feet and slowly moving that through your ankles. Maybe there's a little bit of tension from the past holding there, and by just adjusting your attitude to your body, bringing a sense of acceptance and kindness and awareness, then even unpleasant sensations can be a little less disturbing. Moving up the legs, noticing how your knees feel right now. Maybe bringing a bit of gratitude to our knees, which have done such a good job to look after us, keep us moving around as much as they can. Feeling the weight of the body through the backs of the thighs and allowing that sensation to continue to ground you and connect you between the solid outside world and the solid aspects of your own body. Feeling that part of nature. Noticing the weight of the body through the sit bones. In that hardness is just like the earth, just a part of nature. We can notice how our hips and pelvis feel. Maybe giving our lower back a bit of a stretch. Allowing the stomach to release any tension and become soft and full and round. Letting the rib cage float comfortably over the pelvis. Shoulders relaxed. Maybe your neck just needs a little bit of a stretch or a wiggle. And then just feeling the sensations in the base of the skull and the jaw. It's like the drive that pushes us forward can just get caught in these places. You don't have to do anything right now. You're safe. You don't have to speak and prove anything. Relaxing the nerves around your ears and just giving less value to hearing. Any other muscles in our face that we've been using to engage with the outside world. Just being here in this body, in this present. Noticing if there's any emotions that are still kind of tugging at you. They're okay too. They're also parts of nature. And then just moving the mind subtly more inside to notice more detail. We might be able to feel the gentle coming and going of the breath. Not chasing after it. It's always been there, looking after you, caring for you, giving you unconditional love. Maybe the breath is like sitting by the lake or the ocean on a calm day, just watching the rhythm come in, rhythm come out. Or maybe the breath is like dancing with an old friend, familiar, you have to pay attention to how it's moving, to keep up and keep that harmony. Just mindfully breathing in, mindfully breathing out. Letting the breath hold you and soothe you. Mindful of the in-breath, mindful of the out-breath, bringing contentment, kindness, and awareness to your meditation. Right now, this is good enough. Whatever your experience is. And as your contentment grows, it has a subtle sweetness. Just zooming in a little bit more on that perception. Makes the breath more beautiful. More soft. As we come towards the end of the meditation, take a little bit of time just to ask yourself, how did you use your mind? How did you attend to the present moment? How did you cultivate wholesome states? And how did you abandon unwholesome states? And we can bring our perception a little bit wider out into the body, feeling the touch of cloth on the skin, the feet on the floor, and just putting down that rhythm of the breath. Coming back to an open, clear, and wide perception, cool and calm. And finally, we can share the merit of this meditation. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize the highest peace, Nibbana. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, well, I think it's tea time here. So, everyone online, grab yourself a cup of tea, and we'll be back in a few minutes.
Okay. I have a real bell.
Okay, now everyone's here, everyone's settled in, we can get started with the Dhamma talk. And I want to specifically dedicate any merit from this Dhamma talk with Auntie Peng in Perth, who is a longtime supporter of the Bhikkhu and Bhikkhuni Sangha in Australia and is going through some health difficulties, and asked for the Sangha across Australia to do some chanting for her tonight, but I'm here instead, so we will dedicate the merit with Auntie Peng for her health and resilience through medical stuffs. Okay, so tonight I thought we'd talk about the three roots of unskillful action: greed, hatred, and delusion. Yes, says Adrian. Right, because we're all like little balls of greed, hatred, and delusion. And yeah, I've been having some interesting conversations about this lately, so I thought it was a nice thing to bring up. And then I found this really good sutta as well, so I thought I'd start with there. My idea is that we'll kind of talk about greed, hatred, and delusion, what it is, especially delusion, right? Like, we're so deluded we don't know what delusion is, maybe. Right? So hopefully we shed a little bit of light on delusion. And then we can kind of go through and look at kind of what is the cause, right? We might be taking like the approach of the Four Noble Truths here, but doing it for the three roots of unskillful action instead. And then we can kind of look at what the antidotes are, because I mean, like, we don't want to be little balls of greed, hatred, and delusion. And yeah, how we can practice in our daily lives. So that's what I'm hoping to do. We'll see what happens. So I thought I'd start out with this sutta from the Anguttara Nikaya. It's kind of like topically relevant to the chaos of the world at the moment. Anguttara Nikaya 369, it's called Unskillful Roots. And this is Bhante Sujato's translation. I've put it in the chat for anyone who is online. Okay, mendicants, there are these three unskillful roots. What three? Greed, hate, and delusion. Greed is a root of the unskillful. When a greedy person chooses to act by way of body, speech, and mind, that too is unskillful. When a greedy person, overcome by greed, causes another to suffer under false pretext by execution or imprisonment or confiscation or condemnation or banishment, thinking, I'm powerful, I want power, that too is unskillful. And so too, these many bad, unskillful things are produced in them, born, sourced, originated, and conditioned by greed. Hate is a root of the unskillful. When a hateful person chooses to act by way of body, speech, and mind, that too is unskillful. It's a choice. It's a choice. When a hateful person, overcome by hate, causes another to suffer under false pretext by execution or imprisonment or confiscation or condemnation or banishment, thinking, I'm powerful, I want power, that too is unskillful. And so these two many bad, unskillful things are produced in them, born, sourced, originated, and conditioned by hate. Delusion is a root of the unskillful. When a deluded person chooses to act by way of body, speech, or mind, even delusion's a choice, that too is unskillful. When a deluded person, overcome by delusion, causes another to suffer under false pretext by execution or imprisonment or confiscation or condemnation or banishment, thinking, I am powerful, I want power, that too is unskillful. And so these many bad, unskillful things are produced in them, born, sourced, originated, and conditioned by delusion. Such a person is said to have speech that is ill-timed, false, meaningless, and not in line with the teaching and training. Why is this? This person causes another to suffer under a false pretext by execution or imprisonment or confiscation or condemnation or banishment, thinking, I'm powerful, I want power. So when someone makes a valid criticism, they're scornful and admit nothing. When someone makes a baseless criticism, they make no effort to explain, this is why that's untrue. This is why that's false. That's why such a person is said to have a speech that's ill-timed, false, meaningless, and not in line with the teaching and training. Such a person, overcome with bad, unskillful qualities, born of greed, hate, and delusion, suffers in this very life with distress, anguish, and fever. And when the body breaks up after death, they can expect to be reborn in a bad place. Suppose a sal, axlewood, or boxwood tree was chopped down and engulfed by 3 camel foot creepers. It would fall to ruin and disaster. In the same way, such a person, overcome by bad, unskillful qualities, born of greed, hate, and delusion, suffers in this very life with distress, anguish, and fever. And when the body breaks up after death, they can expect to be reborn in a bad place. These are the 3 unskillful roots. Sounds like a problem, right? We'll get to the other half of the sutta, which is a bit more like optimistic. But I think like what this sutta is really good at is identifying that this is a choice, right? Every time that we are acting out of greed, hate, or delusion, we're choosing this, right? And we're doing it to prop up our sense of identity, right? And so I think like most of us know what greed is and we know what greed feels like. Like it's all those things that we're kind of chasing towards. We probably know what hate feels like. Right? I think everyone here has had a bit of hate. But this delusion, right? What is this delusion? And so what we know is delusion is the active force in our mind that we choose not to know, or we choose to think that we do already know, right? So like I was saying at the beginning, it could be like when you're meditating and you're feeling a little bit grumpy, but you don't want to look at the grumpiness because it's not very pleasant. You've got 2 of the 3 right there. Or have you ever been in that situation when someone's like getting upset and you're trying to have a discussion, or you know, you're trying to work something out with someone and they start yelling at you and you're like, you sound like you're a bit angry, you're yelling, and they're like, I'm not yelling, right? That's a 2-for-1 as well. And I found this really interesting quote from Piyatan in his Sutta Discovery series talking about this. I think it was his sutta, and he was saying that, his opinion was that delusion is like that thing that covers up us moving on to greed or moving on to hate, and that jumping back and forth between them, right? You can think of it like this willful dark cloud that we kind of cast around ourselves sometimes, right? It's and it can lead to all sorts of problems, including obviously this idea that we are mighty and powerful. But it could also lead to the opposite of that, right? And it could manifest in the opposite of that, which is like I'm not worthy and I can't get things done, right? And it's all those stories that we could even tell ourselves about our ability to do things, our ability to even progress in the Dhamma path and stuff like that, right? So that's definitely in there. And then like we also have this third kind of conceit, which is the conceit that I'm the same. And it probably isn't the conceit that you're the same as everybody. It's probably the conceit that you're the same as a certain group of people, right? So these people are my people, and those people are on the outside. They're not like me, right? And so this is kind of like the root of prejudice. And so it's like by not wanting to know, and also by propping up our ideas about the way things are. And this is something that we see all the time in our current media environment, right? So we've got someone who might be thinking, I am mighty, I am powerful. Does anyone know who I might be talking about right now? And they're, they're buddies with someone else who is definitely mighty and powerful, our friend Murdoch. And between them, they're propagating a certain group of ideas which has some people on the inside and some people on the outside, right? So this is one way that we can see both that I'm better and I'm worse, but we can also see that I'm the same, right? There's a certain group of people who are like the acceptable people, and there's everyone else who's on the outside. And so, like, this kind of attitude is also very dehumanizing, right? And so it's like you have to meet certain standards to be a human or a man or a woman or an Australian or whatever it is, right? And it's all those kind of prejudices. And if we think that like a certain group of people are like this, then we're going to be reinforcing those ideas and looking for those qualities in them as well, right? So if you're not willing to get to know someone, let's say, you know, there's been a lot of stuff about, say, the Sudanese community in the news at the moment, and people might see a Sudanese person walking down the street and we might cross to the other side, right? Because we've heard all this stuff in mainstream media about what Sudanese people are like. And by attending our mind to stories around maybe like knife crime or whatever it is, then we've reinforced these ideas about this certain group of people. And if we're willing to actually look, if we're actually willing to get to know, say, a Sudanese person or a trans person or a person who's come from a war-torn country as an immigrant or whatever it is, then we're going to learn that people are complex little balls of greed, hatred, and delusion, and also kindness, gentleness, and curiosity. And we'll see a whole lot more, right? Once we actually are willing to open up and shine that spotlight, then we can see like that is already kind of dismantling this delusion. And so in the previous sutta, the Buddha says that greed is mildly blameworthy and quick to disappear. Hate is very blameworthy, also quick to disappear. And delusion is very blameworthy and very slow to disappear. And you can see how this is, right? Because we're propping up the way that we think about things. Like we're reinforcing our place in society. We're reinforcing the way that we view the world. And it's an active process. We're choosing to keep propping up the things that we believe, and thus continuing that delusion. And so we can also see that like this continuity comes in all three of them, right? It's like we're also choosing to prop up our desires, and we might be doing that to avoid discomfort, right? We might be doing that so that because we don't like change, we don't want to see the impermanence in things. Like if you actually have some, whatever your favorite food is, and you take that first bite, it's probably going to be delicious. But as you chew it, your mind doesn't want to actually look at the reality of it turning to mush in your mouth, right? And the flavors disappearing and that nice texture is changing. And like, the thing that you were so chasing after is kind of like just falling apart. And so what do? We have another spoonful. Right? I mean, sorry to ruin anyone who's going out for dinner after this. Like, we have another spoonful. And we eat, our greed combined with our delusions is like propping up this idea that this is still the most delicious thing. But like that first hit is the most tasty hit of that whole dish of food, bowl of thing, whatever it is, right? You know, whatever that sensory contact is, it's that first bit that's going to be the most pleasant when it's a worldly sensory contact, right? And it's just the delusion and the greed that keeps going, I want that. And the wanting is like reaching out, trying to find that same pleasure that you had at the beginning, right? I mean, we can do this even in our meditation. You could go on a meditation retreat and you could have this amazing meditation experience. And then what are you doing for the rest of the retreat? You're like, what did I have for breakfast that day? which cushion did I sit on? I went and sat over here out in the garden for a bit. And then I did some walking meditation over there. And then like I had this blanket and three cushions here and went a little bit like this, a little bit like, we prop up these ideas that everything's going to be the same. Because like seeing things the way they are can be a little bit uncomfortable sometimes. So that's like the characteristic of suffering, right? It's like we've got the impermanence. And two, we don't want to see that like things changing are just inherently just not going to be the same and not going to meet our expectations. So then we've got this suffering. But we're like, no, I'm the one who can totally control this. I can work this out. I'm a smart, intelligent person. I've got my degrees and my career and all these things. And, you know, I've been a Buddhist for like all my life. I can totally just get to the bottom of this, you know, I can work my way through it. And that's just all those little tricks that we have. And, like, some of them are pretty wholesome, right? Like, when we're getting to the level of just trying to, like, MacGyver our meditation. I mean, that's what it is, right? I mean, I'm guilty. I'm totally guilty. Then, yeah, like, it's very, very, very subtle. But you can see kind of from the different examples that I've given that we're just there propping these things up. And so people ask me then, like, what's the difference between avijja, which is ignorance, and moha, which is delusion, right? And so they're intertwined, and the Buddha does say, like, I think in the next sutta, anyway, this whole section of the Anguttara Nikaya 3s is all about the three unskillful roots, so please go in and explore. I think it's in one of the next sutras where the Buddha says that like moha and avijja are pretty much like the same thing. And it's like the one is the active part of the, you know, the final thing. But also what we can notice is like moha is the presence of something and avijja is the absence of something. And even if you know a little bit of Pali, you know the art on the beginning is like the negative, right? So it's the avijja is like seeing and knowing, right? And so avijja is the unknowing. And it's going back to what I was just saying, it's like the unknowing of the three characteristics. But moha is like the presence and active force that's doing these things. So I had some notes. I'm just making sure I've got everything. So then we can kind of look at what the opposite of these things might be. So I'll go back to the sutta for a second. These are the three skillful roots. What three? Contentment, love, and understanding. Contentment is the root for the skillful. When a contented person chooses to act by way of body, speech, or mind, that too is skillful. When a contented person, not overcome by greed, doesn't cause another to suffer under false pretext, by execution or imprisonment, or confiscation or condemnation or banishment, thinking I am powerful, I want power, that too is skillful. And so these many skillful things are produced in them, born, sourced, and originated, and conditioned by contentment. So we can really see, I'll just stop there for a second, we can really see how karma is in at play here, right, and how these things are starting to work between, like, right view and right intention, right? So right view is basically understanding conditionality and cause and effect. Now, you probably hopefully understand a little bit more about conditionality because it's been like 12 weeks of dependent origination. Someone learned something, right? Please. But yeah, it's looking into cause and effect, because choice is karma, right? Karma isn't fate. It's not a God out there deciding what we're doing. It's us. And if we didn't have the power to make choice, if we didn't have that agency, then, like, there's no chance of getting out of that dependent origination loop, right? No chance of overcoming greed, hatred, and delusion and escaping samsara. So this is a really important point, and I always try and talk about this. So, I mean, these are the kind of choices in our daily lives that we can make, say, to – I'll do that later. Never mind. these are those exact same kind of choices. So you can see here, even with contentment, right, this is the opposite of greed, and it's the same – or similar as renunciation. Like, if we think of Samasankhapa, the second path factor of the Noble Eightfold Path, it's like another way of looking at it. And we can see that then through choosing contentment, it's an active choice again, right? We've actively chosen to pick up contentment instead of picking up greed. And so then when someone chooses that, then they don't need as many things, right? Like, so if we go back to our powerful person, our person who thinks that they need power to be happy and they need to be in control, like, that's just not what you're needing if you're content with what you've got. And, I mean, like, I wouldn't want to be Donald Trump or Rupert Murdoch. I mean, a lot of people were really not happy with them, and they're clearly not happy if they're spreading all this stuff, right? So this is like, people ask me like about the karma of someone becoming Donald Trump. Like, I don't know what his karma is. We couldn't say this, right? But it's pretty weird. Like, I don't know if it, like, just because he's very wealthy, I don't know if this is good karma, right? I don't know if it's good karma. He's definitely not making good karma. Like, the choices that someone like in that kind of level of power is making, like, those kind of choices are creating huge amounts of karma, right? The ripple out of those kind of people is massive and not going to a good place, odds on. Like, I'm not a betting monk, but, you know, I reckon not going to a good place. I'm not the Buddha. I can't predict these things. I know nothing about this stuff except for what the Buddha says, but does not sound good. And so this line here where it's like, and so these many skillful things are produced in them, born of them, sourced of them, originated them, and conditioned by contentment. So it's not just that you're choosing now to do contentment, you're also conditioning this as a habit. And I'm sorry to go back to dependent origination, but our choices condition what we're aware of, right? So avijja paccaya sankhara, sankhara paccaya vijnana, right? So the choices we make condition what we're aware of and the way that we interact with the world. So by choosing contentment, then we're conditioning a different way of looking at the world, right? And so love is the root of the skillful. When a loving person chooses to act by way of body, speech, or mind, that too is skillful. When a loving person, not overcome by hate, doesn't cause another to suffer under a false pretext by execution or imprisonment or confiscation or condemnation or banishment. Thinking, I am powerful, I want power. That too is skillful. And so these many skillful things are produced in them, born, sourced, and originated and conditioned by love. All right, so we're bringing up love here as the antidote to anger. All right, antidote to hate. And then, okay, understanding is a root of the skillful. Understanding is the root of the skillful. When an understanding person chooses to act by way of body, speech or mind, that too is skillful. When an understanding person, not overcome by delusion, doesn't cause another to suffer under false pretext, by execution or imprisonment or confiscation or condemnation or banishment, thinking, I am powerful, I want power, that too is skillful. And so these many skillful things are produced in them, born, sourced, originated and conditioned by understanding. Such a person is said to have speech that's well-timed, true, meaningful, in line with the teaching and the training. Why is this? This person doesn't cause another to suffer under false pretext, by execution, imprisonment, or confiscation, or condemnation, or banishment, thinking, I am powerful, I want power. So when someone makes a valid criticism, they admit it, and they're not scornful. How hard is that, right? When someone's criticizing you, what do you want to do? It's like defend, right? It feels, yeah. And bringing up that curiosity, right? Bring up the curiosity to look inside and be like, is this true? Interesting. It's so easy to give out criticism. It's a lot harder to receive it. So it's like something that we have to like consciously see the value in. And I think this is really an interesting point, right? If we want to overcome delusion, we need to be able to like work with criticism. What a thing. Interesting. They admit it and they're not scornful. When someone makes a baseless criticism, they make an effort to explain, this is why that's untrue. This is why that's false, right? So even if you see something to help overcome delusion, you can actually be like, hey, no, this isn't true. We think like we're in the tradition of like non-conflict and like right speech is not no speech, right? If someone, you know, the Buddha's saying this right here, we just point out why this isn't true. That's why such a person is said to have speech that's well-timed, true, meaningful, and in line with the teaching and training. Right? So if we start like doing this in the middle of a conflict, problem, right? Because like we don't like to listen to criticism, and the other person doesn't like to listen to criticism either, right? And you see here that what the Buddha is giving in this example is this is why it's untrue, this is why it's false, not you're wrong and I'm right, because that would be just like boosting up that delusion again. So one of the things that we can do if we're like handing out criticism is to not speak to like the person, but speak to the action that's happened, right? This is the example that the Buddha is giving us here in terms of skillful speech. And he's also saying like timing's important, right? So it might be that you need to let things cool off a bit. So it's speech that's well-timed, true, meaningful, and in line with the teaching and training, right? So we can see how we're using the view that our choices matter, right? The right view that our choices matter, to base our intentions on kindness, love, and understanding. And then through that, it's starting to show up into right speech. What's that? The first three factors of the Eightfold Path. It's how it works, right? These things condition each other. And like, I'm not going to stop talking about like the unsexy parts of the Eightfold Path, because everyone wants to know about like jhanas and like satipatthana. But like this is how we condition these things, right? Because like the mind in meditation is like really just manifesting our habits, right? So it's like if we're not even willing to look at what's going on in our meditation because we have a lot of delusion, if we're someone who I mean, it might be that you've actually had to use delusion as a way to protect yourself as well, right? And not in a harmful way. But it's like there are things that are just too hard to look at for some people. And it's like only once we're in a place where we feel like a sense of safety and that we have trustworthy people around us and the conditions are right, that we are even willing to take that spotlight, you know, or that torch or that little candle or the little match and just maybe just shine it off into that dark cupboard that we throw all the things we don't want to know about, right? So it's, you know, it takes a lot of work and to know that knowing is important, right? So it's not just like it's not just understanding that we can have then as the non-delusion, right? So we can think of it just as non-greed, non-hate, and non-delusion. But the Buddha also gives us some different examples of what overcomes delusion, right? So like we can see that delusion creates prejudice, so inclusion could be one of the ways that we could do it, right? Curiosity, we've already spoken about that. Wisdom, right? Wisdom is like getting to that higher level stuff, right? It's getting towards kind of, you know, the avijja stuff, but it's also like just looking into cause and effect. Like when we do our meditation, we look into cause and effect and we see how did we develop the skillful and how did we develop the unskillful, right? Like what were the tendencies of our mind? And it's not that we need to be taking notes when we're doing meditation about these things. It's if this is something that's important to us, if we go, knowing is important to me and I'm not going to run away from that dark monster of not knowing, then you will pay more, you'll be willing to pay more attention. And we were having a discussion a little while ago, Venerable Pekka from Santi, who I think's on the call, was asking about virya, right? And so virya is like that effort or energy that we can use in our practice, but it's also related to the word vira or viro, which is the Pali word for hero, right? And so what does the hero do? The hero overcomes the defilements, right? The hero slays the dragon. But you have to be willing to turn towards the dragon first. If you're just running away from the dragon, you got no chance. There's this lovely story, I think it's in the suttas and not in the commentaries, of like the, oh gosh, someone who knows this better than me is going to have to help. I think it's the Titans and the
Asuras.
Yeah, and the Asuras. It is the Asuras. And like one's chasing the other and the Asura king is like all of a sudden stops because he sees a cute little bird and he doesn't want to run it over. Right? And by stopping, the Titans stop chasing and think, oh, the Asuras must be really powerful. And it's just that stopping and turning that overcame, like, that was heroic. Like, you know, in another situation, like, if you think about, there's this simile in ACT therapy. I don't know if anyone knows ACT, about Dr. Stephen Hayes talking about when he was a kid and he used to have a dream of, like, a dinosaur chasing him. And, like, this was a nightmare and he'd always wake up really scared. And one day he realized that all he had to do was stop and turn towards this dinosaur and the dinosaur would just shrink down and disappear and it wouldn't come any closer. And this is the most of the thing that, like, most of our problem is, like, putting our mindfulness in those places towards our dinosaurs and monsters and titans that are coming towards us. And, like, just being able to see, like, what that thing is and what it's made up of, because we're not going to be able to overcome these things if we're not even willing to look at them. And so We can also fool ourselves into thinking that we're seeing things, right? We were having a conversation just before about intuition and how intuition fits into the path. And that was really interesting, right? Like, what is this intuition? And we can, and I, you know, because I've been thinking about delusion. I was like, how do we know it's intuition? And how do we know we're not just like making it up? I mean, the way that intuition seems to work is it seems to do like this pattern matching thing, right? So the mind is really good at pattern matching, and that's what creates our delusion, right? It's like this, you know, Bhattacharya always uses the Sesame Street example. This one thing is just like the other. This one thing's just the same, right? It's the function of Sanya to do this, because otherwise we'd have to be figuring out what that thing was every single time. So that function is just a normal function of the mind. But when it's been kind of conditioned in certain ways, then it matches those patterns in certain ways. So this is all that, you know, this is how I understand then, like, intuition to be, is it's just like very subtle micro recognitions and it from our past, right? Like I was talking at the beginning, all those things that come up in your meditation when you're meant to be meditating and instead you're thinking about the thing, they're all like echoes of the past, right? And this is the same with our intuition. It's just our mind doing this pattern matching. And so how do we, like, sometimes our intuition can be like heaps spot on. And, you know, the other question we had was like, what about psychic powers and those kind of things, right? And this is the other thing Pei was asking. And, I mean, psychic powers generally are developed through, like, at least in a Buddhist context, they're developed through a pure mind, right? It's through abandoning the five hindrances, those kind of things, and having, you know, the ability to abandon the five hindrances, which would get you into jhana. All right. And so then the mind is purified. It's not distorted by wanting, not wanting, restlessness, all those things, right? Not distorted by different manifestations of greed and hate. So then we can see that that intuition is like from a mind that is at least temporarily empowered and purified. So then our intuition is going to be spot on. But if you were like really angry about someone and you're like, oh, my intuitions are going to do this, chances are your intuition is colored by a whole lot of dye, right? It's, you know, and so then even what we can do, and this is kind of, I guess, like one way that like people who've experienced trauma might have this as well. Like they're just doing this pattern matching the whole time. So if you've got like PTSD, you hear the loud bang and you think you're back in the war zone or whatever it is, right? It's the mind doing this pattern matching. And it feels very real. Like when someone is having those kind of flashbacks or emotional flashbacks, physical flashbacks, whatever it is, right? It feels really, really real to them, and that's no different in that way. It's just that it's a diluted form of that intuition, right? And so then what we would do if we're agitated by something is that we react in that way as if that thing was really happening, right? And so by reacting in that way, we're creating the conditions for the other bits of the environment to also react back to us in that same little way. Like we're starting to create a cycle that conditions more anger or whatever it is, right, or more fear. And so we can see then like how this works in the mind, whether it's like, so, you know, then we have, yeah, we have these tools of curiosity, like what's really happening, what, you know, where am I? And also the other one that we have to overcome delusion is yoni samanasikara, right? Rational application of the mind, looking back into the causes that happened, right? And you'd be like, oh, yeah, no, that didn't really happen. That just kind of triggered this memory for me. Or, like, what led me to make this choice, right? Because all our choices are conditioned. All our actions are conditioned, right? So we can see then how reviewing throughout a day, or even like noticing if we're having these kind of strong emotions, like what conditioned that? Hey, if we're having good, positive, happy emotions, what conditioned that? Because we want to condition those as well, right? We want to condition contentment. We want to condition curiosity, and we want to condition love, right? So don't just do this when you're having like greed, hatred, and delusion. Do it when you're having the other ones too, because like we want those. They're really great. So using that curiosity to look back into cause and effect is so powerful, right? So yeah, the Buddha's talked about how like if we really want to overcome delusion, if delusion is like one of our things, then it's like we practice this through the Eightfold Path, right? We practice this using right speech and speaking in a way that is, who knows the four kinds of right speech? First one. Anyone? Yay. Yep. Truth, right? Not telling lies. Second one. Harmless speech. That's the third one, but it'll do. Very good. Divisive speech, right? That's the wrong kind of speech. And the right kind of speech is speech that brings people together, that's harmonious, right? So you can see again, it's coming back to these ideas of like inclusion and acceptance. And, you know, that's part of contentment as well. So we're kind of, and it's part of love. So all these things we're conditioning through our speech. And then the last one, Sampalapa. Malaysians in here, what's Sampa? Indonesians, come on. What's Sampa? Rubbish. Rubbish, right? Oh, yeah. It's rubbish speech. Like, and there's so much rubbish out there, and it's intentionally being generated, right? It's what's AI slop? It's rubbish. We're creating delusion every time we use AI. That's the end of my AI spiel for today. See more next week with Buntes Giotto. But he's right. Like, we don't want to be conditioning delusion. We don't want to be conditioning these things, right? So we want to be creating things in the world that are beneficial and real and human, right? Human connection, really important. Right. Next on the Eightfold Path is after right speech. Yeah. Yay, right action. Okay, so right action is basically keeping the five precepts. They're a choice, right? When you take the five precepts, you say, I undertake the training. It's not thou shalt not, it's I undertake the training, right? It's a choice. Every single one of those is a choice to overcome greed, hatred, and delusion, right? Hatred, overcome it very easily by not killing things, right? Greed, overcome by not stealing. Right? Lust, overcome by avoiding sexual misconduct. And it's also going to get you in all sorts of conflict. Right? Lies, lying. We just did that, so that's cool. Right? And intoxicants, the rule that everyone finds really hard for some reason. Why? Because delusion's really tasty. Right? It's basically, that is there to overcome delusion, right? Why do we want to take intoxicants? Because we don't want to know. And this is something like I became very familiar with when I was sick for so long, right? Because I had pain and I just didn't want to know. So I was feeding the delusion monster. This is what got me really interested in this, right? I was actively not wanting to look at the uncomfortable thing. And, like, this is the root of addictions, right? How many people get hooked on alcohol or painkillers or, you know, marijuana or other drugs, right? Because they just don't want to know. They don't want to know about their difficult circumstances. They don't want to know about their physical discomfort. They don't want to know about their bad relationship or whatever it is, right? And so this is how we use intoxicants, whether they're, you know, drugs and alcohol and those kind of things that are covered by the five precepts, or like doom scrolling. Doom scrolling, right? We don't want to know what's going on around us. We feel some discomfort. So we might like go on the internet and watch some kittens. I mean, kittens are okay, But like kittens are great. If that's your choice, that's a far better choice than kind of some of the things that are on you know, YouTube shorts or whatever. But we're doing it probably because we don't want to know that uncomfortable feeling, whether it's like loneliness or physical discomfort or hunger or, you know, our anger and frustration about something. We don't want to face these uncomfortable feelings, right? And so we'll choose delusion. And like when we make these choices, we're reinforcing it. Every time we're like, go, oh, my screen time 15 minutes is up, but I'm just going to go like add another 15 minutes to it. Then we're going, I value delusion. Yeah. So, you know, just trying to cultivate curiosity, trying to cultivate inclusion. And like, if this is a thing for you, then it's like just something we have to keep picking up again and again. Right. And it's throughout our day. It's not just something that we do in the 20 minutes, five days a week that you're all doing meditation, and like Bhantesiddhartha says. It's something that we can value throughout the day. We can value like truthfulness and these aspects of right speech when we're at work, right? Right livelihood. It's a thing that we do with a lot of our time, whether we're employed or whether we're doing kind of like household labor or whatever kind of labor that we're doing, then it's that time to practice like all those earlier factors in the Eightfold Path. It's time to look at our delusion, right? It's the time to cultivate truth, cultivate that gentleness, cultivate that kindness. And then like we're developing that curiosity then, right? And so next in the Eightfold Path is right effort. You got to have a little bit of curiosity. You got to be looking into cause and effect to know what is the skillful and what is the unskillful, to know what we need to cultivate and what we need to abandon, right? And like we're almost at jhana here. Like pretty good, right? We're getting up to satipatthana and jhana, and this is how we've already cultivated these things, and we've kind of already talked about cultivating these things in meditation, right? And the ending of all this suffering is by practicing the Noble Eightfold Path. It's through doing this that we can, you know, get over that final avijja. I guess I should read the end of the sutta. I never got to the end of the sutta. And then we can finish up. Okay. So for such a person, bad unskillful qualities born of greed, hatred and delusion are cut off at the root. Made like a palm stump, obliterated, unable to arise in the future. In this very life, they're happy, free of distress and anguish and fever, and they're also extinguished in this very life. Suppose a sal, axlewood, or boxwood tree was choked and engulfed by three camelfoot creepers. Then comes along a person with a spade and a basket. They'd cut off the creeper by the roots, dig them up and pull them out, down to the fibers and stems. Then they'd split the creeper apart, cut up the parts and chop it into splinters. They'd dry the splinters in the wind and the sun, burn them with fire and reduce them to ashes. These are strong words, right? The Buddha's not messing around. Then they'd sweep away the ashes in a strong wind, or float them away down a swift stream. So those camel foot creepers would be cut off at the root, made like a palm stump and obliterated, unable to arise in the future. In the same way, for such a person, bad unskillful qualities of greed, hatred and delusion are cut off at the root, made like a palm stump, obliterated and unable to arise in the future. In this very life, they're happy, free of distress, anguish and fever, and they're also extinguished in this very life. These are the three skillful roots. Cool. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, I've got some comments in the chat here. Simran, what is it? Simran's asking, I think, about like people who want power, and she said, but what's in their mind? Is it a pure intention? As in, if he generally thinks he's doing a good from helping, and some conflicts, for example, then he would generate some good karma. And I mean, this is the thing, right? Like most of us who just regular old worldlings, not the Arya type, regular old Joe worldling. we have like bright and dark karma, right? But we also have a lot of grey karma. Like most of our intentions are a little bit me-centered, even if they're like mostly altruistic or whatever, right? So that's definitely, you know, a thing. And you know, in the sutras, we've got this idea of like the wheel turning monarch who couldn't do any harm, and it's like the Buddha could either have become like the wheel turning monarch, or he could have become like a fully awakened Buddha. I mean, like the wheel turning monarch, you think it's not the kind of I want power, you know, person, right? It's the person who is there again for like the benefit and happiness of many in a different kind of way. And most of the people we see rising to power are the greed, hatred, and delusion kind of people, right? And I know talking many years ago now to a former Australian senator, and he was saying like he was a senator for the Greens, but even he was saying like he would meet his other like party colleagues and even people from like Liberal Party or from some of those kind of wacky parties that are out there, whatever it is. And he'd said like all these people came to power with good intentions. But power kind of has this nature of corrupting, right? Because it comes back to these kind of idea, the three kinds of conceit, right? It's always this I'm better, I'm worse, and I'm the same. It's creating these groups of people and categorizing people. And so people who've come like from maybe like a really community-orientated background or something like that, it's still going to be feeding into them just because of the nature of the way that hierarchical power is set up, right? And like, gosh, I don't know how – haven't got that much time, so I can't go into hierarchical power. But if you look at the structure of the vineyard and how the Buddha set things up, you can see – it's totally flat. It's amazing, right? And it's based on consent. It's based on everyone being enthusiastically wanting to be there and do the thing. Very different to a hierarchical power structure, right? So another time for that rant. Okay. Oh, Scott says, some really think that Trump is the cat's pajamas. It's quite clear that his words are a lie upon a lie seems to be a degree of delusion in the opinions. And yeah, and like, and this is why I want to talk about this. It's just like that mechanism that keeps feeding those delusion, even though like he's totally undermining like the well-being of a lot of the people who voted for him, and they still think he's doing great. It's because it's reinforcing that view, right? And once we understand something, it's really hard for us to be willing to realize that we made a good a bad choice, right? Going back to the criticism, it's even hard for us to criticize ourselves once we've realized, like, you know, when you look and you're like, oh my gosh, I made a really bad choice, that's really hard. That takes like a certain amount of courage and humility and strength, right? And you need to be like in a safe position to be able to do this. So these people who maybe were like very poor or working class people who voted for Trump, now it may not feel even safe to speak out and go against that, right? Because like when you're feeling threatened, when you've got fear going on, then it's very hard to have that courage then to look at your delusion, right? You just don't have that level of safety. And so then those people can actually be generating more prejudice, even though like the prejudice that say Trump is doing is going to trickle down to everyone, right? It might be just picking on immigrants and trans people or whatever right now, but it's going to be trickling down to how women are treated, how working class people are treated. Only a few people win. They're in that I'm the same group of Trump. Most of us aren't the same as Trump. Thank goodness, because we've got a hope then. Okay. Oh, no, Simran, I'm not having a dig at your question. I didn't even see it. I'm not very good at reading these things. My eyesight's not great. hopefully I've answered your question about karma. If not, please put another question in the chat. A lot of harm has come from good intentions. It's true, because of delusion, right? Because of, like, if someone comes and they're like, oh, I really want to help you with this thing, right? But they haven't asked you how you need help, and they just start like rearranging your house and cleaning things and putting things in different places. Helpful or not? Probably not, right? But they come with good intentions. If they've gone, hey, Adrian, how can I help you today? I see that you're like really busy and I want to help you out. You'd be like, oh, you can do this. Same kind of thing. Sorry to pick on you, Adrian. You're right in front of me. That was probably Moo's question. So, yeah. Okay. Okay, excellent talk. Thank you, Venerable Upeka. and some sadhus. Okay. Oh, okay. Okay, Simran. So it was Simran. Yeah. All right. I was not having a dig at Simran's thing, and she did not think I was having a dig at her question either. So we're all cool. Anyone in here have any questions before we wrap up? Yes, Nina.
It was very interesting when you said at the beginning that the Buddha somewhere else said that greed and hate, they go quickly, but
yes,
the delusion stays longer.
Yes.
So it made me think that greed and hate are like the fuel. And like any kind of fuel, once it burns through, it's there. But something has to then rekindle it.
And I think the Buddha actually gives this simile, like somewhere. I didn't pull that one up, but so Nina was saying like that with the simile, you know, greed and hate, they disappear quickly, and it's like the fire going out. And surely the Buddha spoke about this fires, right? Mm-hmm. And that like the delusion is just that rekindling of the fire. So.
But even like delusion to me seems sometimes like a membrane.
Yeah.
You just can't. Like the,
yeah.
You need the Dharma to puncture it.
You need wisdom, right? You need curiosity. You need to want to bring things in that aren't already in your perception range, right? Yeah, yeah.
So I'm saying if there's no more, if you get rid of delusion, greed and hate naturally just disappear.
I reckon, I mean, like what we do, that's an interesting question. I think what we're doing is just trying to like let go of these things. And so if we think of all the different fetters that one lets go of at the different stages of enlightenment, then there are different aspects of like greed, hatred and delusion. And a lot of them are actually tied into that delusion then, which is that glue that's holding those things together, right? So that would make sense. Yeah, yeah.
That's a good question. Is there some relevance to the imprisonment, execution, banishment? Why does he keep referring to that?
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that was something that I was kind of interested in. And he's talking about I didn't talk enough about this, I think. Okay, so Andrew asked about this imprisonment and banishment and conflict stuff that was in this sutta. And so that comes into the cause for us wanting to have greed, hatred and delusion, right? It's like that and that creating of the self, right? It's the... it's how our craving reaches out and creates, it basically creates conflict. Everything we want, we're in a competition, right? Everything we want, it's doing that in one way or another. It's creating that conflict and pushing things aside. In one of the dependent origination sutras, which the Buddha did do this. Bhantacharya didn't do this. in the Mahanidana Sutta, the Buddha actually like puts that into the links of how like craving conditions, like taking up of the weapons and getting into conflicts and all those things. And we also know this in the Honeyball Sutta as well, right? It's like that proliferation of the experience creates this whole conflicting situation that's how wars even start, right? So going back to the question about wars, like it's through the continual feeding and proliferation of these things that happens. So I think that answers your question. Yes. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. So, So we'll wrap it up for tonight. Thank you, everyone, for coming along. I have a few announcements, and Nina has one as well. My first announcement is Bhante Sujato's Katina is on the 25th in Hornsby. So I think people can get in touch with Diff. It's in the Lokanta website, and probably like information's on the signal group. If you're not going to that, then Ayayeshi asked me to let people know that she's doing her fundraising thing in Canley Vale, also on the 25th at 1 o'clock. So you might be able to go to Bhante's Cantina and then go and get a second feed over in Canley Vale. She's already sold 10 tickets and she normally sells 80 tickets. So if you know anyone who would want to get a good feed and support an amazing cause, which is her work in India supporting women and nuns and orphanages and very good things that she's doing, try and check out Ayayeshi probably on Facebook and also for the bodhicittavihara.com website. So Bodhicitta is her group, but if you look up Ayayeshi, then you'll find her. And no, they're one after the other, so you can get two yummy feeds. I mean, it finishes at one, so, I mean, you might not get from Hornsby all the way to Canley Vale unless you have a binya and you can go flex and wind up there. But it might be, yeah. Anyway, do as you see fit. And if it's a cause that you want to support and you can't make it, then there might be other ways you can support the cause as well. So that... We're having Sutta discussion on Sunday and Pindapat as well. So Pindapat in Burwood Park around 11:30 and Sutta discussion at 1:30 in Concord at Pace Place. Track down someone through one of the many WhatsApp and single groups to find out stuff about that. Nina, your turn.
Just want to start reminding people about the wonderful Metta convention.
Come.
The wonderful Metta convention that will be happening soon. I'm on the marketing committee, so I have some good news. We have flyers and posters, and we want to recruit you for that effort. So please, I have brought the posters and the flyers, and I'd like to give them out. So not maybe to the people online, they're lucky. But if you have any people that you know who might be interested, it's going to be magnificent. There's going to be so many monastics and meditators. And I'm just getting excited. Just
there's so much planning going into it. I've seen the spreadsheets.
Yes, and you can't see it here, but Venerable, you're here somewhere.
Yeah.
Yes, and I'm like, who's that? There's Venerable.
And Nina, do we still need volunteers to help handing out posters and flyers?
Yes. So yeah. If you want to do some pavement pounding and really get to the grassroots, the roots, then
cultivate
then,
some skillful action. Yeah, help out with the Metta convention.
Skillful action, very skillful.
Okay.
Yes. So please get in touch. Anywhere. Yeah. Wherever. And we'll coordinate you.
Okay.
And there's flyers. Right. Who wants some flyers?
I'll take some.
I need some for the Vihara. So, yeah. November 8 and 9.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay.
Save the date.
Save the date, and it's also gonna be on Zoom, right? So even the people online, they can watch.
I don't think a lot of it's, some of it's going to be on Zoom, maybe. I'm not sure.
Okay. Well,
I'm just marketing it. I don't know anything. I don't know anything about it.
You just work it. Okay. Got it.
I don't think so. You have to come to Sydney.
Oh, okay.
You have to feel the energy.
Come on over, guys. All right. Thank you everyone for joining. And, Bhante will be back next week. So sadi.